This episode of Continuing Mission is brought to you by the wonderful patrons of Trek FM, who support us through Patreon. If you love Star Trek discussion, visit patreon.com/trekfm to find out how you can help and even become a part of the team. That's patreon.com/trekfm, and we thank everyone for their support.
Hey everyone, I'm Rod Roddenberry, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome everyone to another episode of Continuing Mission, our look at the ways in which fans are keeping Star Trek alive. I'm your host, Dennis Castello, and the primary focus of this show is on the fan series, or independent productions, that tell new stories set in the Star Trek universe. In this episode, I'm joined by Richard Wells and Scott Johnson, the guys behind Starbase Studios. Now, Starbase Studios isn't a fan film exactly. It's a collection of TOS-era sets, along with some costumes and props that they make available to other fan groups who want to film their own productions. It's like a do-it-yourself fan film kit. My conversation with Richard and Scott was half of a two-part interview with them and with the makers of Starship Grissom, a unique educational fan film. Richard and Scott are speaking from a community library in their hometown, so you're likely to hear some background noise on their end from time to time, but I think the unique nature of their project more than makes up for it. So let's take the turbo lift to the briefing room and begin our discussion with Richard Wells and Scott Johnson of Starbase Studios. Welcome, Richard Wells. Thank you very much for coming on to Continuing Mission to talk about Starbase Studios. Richard, why don't you tell us a little bit about what Starbase Studios is, and then we'll go into some personal background on you.
Starbase Studios is a Star Trek TOS fan film studio in Oklahoma City. It's owned by myself and my good friend Scott Johnson, who's here with me.
Oh, hello, Scott.
Hey, how you doing out there?
So we have reproduced some of the sets from the original Star Trek series. Like now we have the bridge, we have a sick bay, and we're just almost complete with the transporter room. And what we do is we open our studio up to any Star Trek fans who want to produce their own fan films or vignettes or whatever to put up on the web or YouTube that you know, otherwise wouldn't be able to afford to build sets.
Wow, that is really fantastic. That's one of the coolest things I've heard in a long time, I have to say. As somebody who's always kind of, I went to film school and I work here in Los Angeles in the TV industry, and I've always dreamed of making my own Star Trek fan film and never actually done it. And I have the idea that there's somebody out there who has standing sets of the TOS Enterprise that's open to fans to make their films is just mind-bogglingly cool. I applaud you guys.
We found since we started this that there's a lot of people out there who's always had that dream of making their own shows.
So before we dive into the details and learn all about Starbase Studios, why don't we learn a little bit about you two?
Okay, well, I've lived in Oklahoma City and in the central area of Oklahoma my entire life. The studio we've been running it about 2.5 years now, I'm guessing.
Yeah, it's getting
close. It's been open
to
about 2.5 years. Whenever I'm not doing that, which has almost become a full-time job these days, a full-time job we don't get paid for. I am an audio tech. I do sound for concerts and festivals and things like that around, mostly around Oklahoma now. I used to tour all over the place, but these days I'm pretty much in Oklahoma most of the time.
And Scott?
I come from the concert business along with Richard. I did lighting for pretty much anybody throughout the late 70s, 80s, and early 90s in music, from country to rock to opera to lighting up the president when he was down here, doing a couple of different things. So, met Richard about 20 years ago, through our concert business stuff. Now I am retired, so if I'm not out doing Star Trek at Starbase Studios, I'm probably sitting at home on the couch watching some good Bugs Bunny.
Fantastic. Let's start with Scott. How did you become a Star Trek fan? What brought you into the Trek fandom thing, and what was your first Trek?
Oh, my first Trek is my only Trek, the original series.
Outstanding.
My mom was a fan. Back in the day when it was originally on TV, I am old enough to remember a few episodes from, you know, way back then as I was watching it through the bars of the playpen. But, you know, I started watching it back in the 60s with my mom and watched Next Gen, you know, as I was a little bit older when Next Generation came out. But still, my liking is back for the original with Kirk, Spock, McCoy, you know, the big three.
Sure.
I've always been an avid TOS fan. You know, the other Star Treks are, yeah, it is Star Trek, but it's not my Star Trek. My Star Trek is the original.
Excellent. And Richard?
Well, obviously at my age, I started with TOS, but I'm one of the people, I like them all. So I really started getting in, you know, more into Star Trek when Next Gen and DS9 came on, and I said, I'm a fan of all the Star Treks. So, yeah, but, you know, being able to have these sets and being able to walk onto the Enterprise Bridge something every day, you know, that's something that I've always, you know, wanted to do since I was a kid. So it's been exciting.
So did you have a group of Trek friends growing up who shared your fandom, or were you all alone out there?
Yeah, I pretty much did not. I was about the only person I knew that liked sci-fi when I was young.
And I had a few friends of mine, you know, that I run around with back in elementary school, or, you know, hey, I had a blue sweatshirt. My buddy had a yellow one. Another buddy had a red one. So, you know, we took some kind of like black Sharpie marker or something and put, you know, like the commander rank braids on it and put the little, you know. So, I mean, yeah, I ran around and played Star Trek as a kid a little bit. But not a whole big group of fans or, you know, of friends. I got along with probably three or four guys throughout elementary school and high school, and we pretty much all stuck together in our little foursome. We didn't care what everybody else did, so we did what we wanted to do when we wanted to do it. But we weren't the popular bunch either, so, you know.
Sure. How did the idea of Starbase Studios first come to be? I mean, who came up with this idea? How long did it take before it started to come together? That kind of thing.
Well, there is another project that shoots here at Starbase Studios called Starship Ajax. The guy, the executive producer behind that, his name is John Hughes. And he talked to the guys that were with Starship Exeter, which were located down in Austin, Texas. They produced a couple of shows. The latest one that we all finally got to see the end of, I believe last year, was the Tresarian Intersection. When they went out of production, they had nowhere to store the sets that they had. So they were stored outside in kind of like a pole barn type of storage where, you know, the wall doesn't go all the way to the ground. So when John contacted these guys, ended up going down to Austin, Texas, looking at the stuff that they had, it was in some pretty sad shape. The Exeter guys weren't going to do anything with it anymore because they had finished up and wrapped on their last, you know, production that they were doing. So John talked to him about bringing this stuff back to Oklahoma and housing it, which was originally out in El Reno at the El Reno Air Park, which was stored in an aircraft hangar. They brought this idea of doing Starship Ajax to fruition. Well, we're still in fruition trying to get that first episode shot in the can and out. But not enough people to help, so it progressed very slowly. Then we started getting into other interests of, well, Richard and I wanted to do other projects. Richard came up with the Starship Grissom idea, you know, with our educational-based show. So we kind of wanted to split off and do other things other than just Starship Ajax. So that's when Richard and I went to John and said, look, you concentrate on making your show. Richard and I want to take the studio aspect of things and go forward from there. So what, we did that about two and a half years ago, and we have just had an outpouring of interest from people that are wanting to make fan films, such as Starship Republic. They're located in Florida. They want to come here and shoot. We've got Starship Melbourne. They are located out of Kansas. We have Star Trek Anthology, which is another group based out of Vermont that want to come down here and shoot. So, I mean, you know, once we said, look, there's three Star Trek sets or bridges that are in the continental United States. We are the only one that's open to have anybody come here and shoot. Whether you want to make a fan film, you want to make a short, you want to do a vignette, you got a kid that's in school that needs to do a science project for class and he thinks Star Trek's cool, hey, bring him down to our set. Use our stuff as a background. You know, if we can help out in any way, shape, or form, you know, give us a call and let us know. But we're willing to pretty much work with anybody that wants to do something that's affiliated with Star Trek.
That's just fantastic. That's fantastic. Have you scheduled or booked any shoots yet?
Well, we have, there's several on the StarbaseStudios.net calendar that anybody can go, you know, to our website, go to the calendar page, and you can request, you know, a date that Richard and I then will go in and, oh, well, wait, you can't come in that week. We've already got somebody here. So, but yes, to answer your question, we've got several people that already have slated to come in this year and shoot.
We've had one episode release so far since we've been open. That's Starship Valiant. They have released their first vignette. And there's probably been...
Yeah, it's Starship Valiant. The episode title is The Ties That Bind.
Yeah, there's been six or eight others that have filmed here that are in post. And I've got probably at least a dozen so far this year who's wanting to come in and film, you know, this year. You know, that's... So, I mean, we've been getting a ton of calls. I've even had people contact me from Newfoundland and Germany who are wanting to fly over here and film in our sets.
Wow.
Well, also, December 2014, right when we were just basically, you know, getting our bridge up and running, and I don't think, did we have sick bay at that time?
No,
I can't remember.
Not then, just bridge.
There's a group, it's called Starship, is it Starship or Star Trek? I think it's Starship Yorktown. They're a group from Canada, which is the executive producer behind that name is John Atkin. They started filming Yorktown back in the middle 80s, like 86.
Oh, yes, I've heard of this.
Who played the original Sulu on the original series. Well, the stuff that was shot with him was, you know, shot back in the middle 80s to where he still, you know, looked like young Sulu. Because all the stuff that he's in is down on, like, planet shots and stuff and whatever. So they had all that stuff in the can, but they never had a bridge where they could shoot their bridge scenes for this show. So they came down in December of 14 and shot what they needed to do. Hopefully that is going to be released sometime this year, around like August, September, you know, for the 50th anniversary of Trek.
That's fantastic. That's that you guys actually were able to facilitate the completion of a fan film that began in the 80s. And I believe, didn't they shoot on film those scenes with George Takei?
Yeah, that was all shot on Super 8 film.
So that's amazing. They started in the film era, and they're finishing up in the digital age. And you guys made it possible by having your sets available.
Yeah, John Atkin pretty well documented how they went about pulling film grain off of the original film and dubbing it over onto the digital prints to get everything to match up.
Right, right. Because Super 8, depending on the kind of stock you use, Super 8 can be very grainy. I've used it myself.
Well, we are both looking forward to seeing that, you know, come to life, hopefully by the end of this year. I mean, I've been wanting to watch it since, you know, they originally started shooting back in the 80s.
Yeah.
It hasn't been done yet. So, but we, you know, if you're a hardcore Trek fan, you know about Yorktown. It's been out. They've been trying to make it for, you know, almost 30 years now, so...
So from the time that your friend John saw the remains of the set in Texas that had suffered from exposure to the weather, how long did it take to get it to the state that it's in now, and what kind of work was involved?
Oh, all kinds of work, from basic carpenter skills to, which, you know, I don't have. I mean, I'm a lighting guy. You know, my specialty is I bring lights to, you know, anybody's project that wants to shoot here. You know, hey, talk to me. I'm the lighting guy. We've had so many different people come in and help with, you know, painting, construction. Hey, if you know how to hold a screwdriver and you know the business end of a hammer, come on down. Let's party, you know. There's so many people that have helped. So many different aspects of, you know, technology as far as like wiring, making different buttons and jewels for the actual set. You know, we cast our own molds. We cast this. We, you know, make that. We, you know,
And all stuff that we'd never done before we started this project. The actual bridge that we got from Starship Exeter, like Scott was saying, had been stored in pole barns. So we only got about half of the bridge set, and it was in pretty bad shape. So it had to be recovered. We utilized a frame and this new skin and covering and everything else, had to be done from scratch. Then we were able to use those pieces as our guides and then build on around and build a complete 360 bridge.
Which took a lot of measuring, because if anybody watches the original series, there are no right angles in original Trek. There's not. This constructing of this thing is a nightmare. There's no basic set of plans that you can go out and buy or whatever. So it's a lot of, well, let's look at this still shot. Okay, how long does that? Well, does it look short? No, it looks long. Well, I don't. Okay, let's cut it in half and call it good. It's been a nightmare, but it's been a lot of fun. Meeting new people is what keeps bringing me back to this. I'm an avid fan of the original Trek, but making new friends, and getting together, doing something that we all love, and to keep it striding going forward. That's, I think, my big draw of why I keep doing this. Because it gets monotonous on days. It's like Richard was saying earlier. You can almost consider it to be a full-time job, but it's not a job. It's a hobby.
Sure.
It can be like a full-time job with as much as what this requires to do. Sometimes it's like, okay, we're not doing Star Trek this week. I'm taking this week off. We will talk to you next Monday. But we've got a lot of shoots scheduled to come up that are coming up this year. I think our next one that we have on the books is with a friend of Richard and myself. His name is Glenn Wolf. He's out of Chicago. His story is called The Federation Files. We have a shoot scheduled here with him the first weekend of March. It's like the 4th through the 8th or something like that. But it's four or five days. And he's got cast coming in from across the country and whatever, that they're all going to rendezvous here in Oklahoma. And we're going to make us some Star Trek.
You talked about making new friends. So other than that, making new contacts, new acquaintances, and new friends, what would you say has been your favorite part of the endeavor?
Just getting to play Star Trek. And the first time that I got to go out with Richard, when he called, Richard called me up and said, "Hey, man, aren't you a Star Trek fan?" And I said, "Yeah, but I like the original series. I've seen Next Gen. I've watched Deep Space Nine. But, I really like Mr. Spock, so... my ties are to the original series." He says, "Well, dude, I've got something to show you. You need to come out here with me to this place, and I want to show you something." Now, granted, this was, about 3 years ago when I first became affiliated with any of these guys. So Richard comes over and picks me up. We take a little 45-minute drive out of town to El Reno and walk into this aircraft hangar, and I'm like, "Oh, crap." The bridge wasn't built. It was basically the frame around the starboard side. But the chair, yeah, was out in the middle. You can be like, "Oh, crap." You know exactly what it was as soon as I walked into the building. I'm like, "Oh, my God, this is Star Trek." So I signed up that day and have been working with Richard, as much as possible since then. But it was a big draw for me just seeing the chair, getting to sit in the chair. It was like, "Oh, man, this is awesome." So that's where I'm at with it. Avid fan of the original series. I love doing this. I love the aspect that we're trying to open it up to anybody that wants to come shoot here. We don't charge for rents of the studio or anything. We do ask for, a nominal donation to help us. I keep on the electric. If you're going to come down here and shoot a movie, I don't want to pay your electric bill, because if I got to pay the bill, I want to shoot my movie.
Right.
But other than that, that's
fair enough.
Yeah, that's basically how we operate. Everybody that comes in to, volunteer to be on the crew, whether you're going to help me out with lighting or, you may be helping Richard out with doing some graphics. And he's our computer guy that takes care of all the 57 computer monitors that engulf the bridge. So, Richard is our forte specialist on that stuff, because that is not my department. But, we bring in new people. I might get a couple of guys to help me out with lighting, or as a grip or, you know, camera guy. We might need somebody to come in and run the slate, you know, or do continuity, or we need a boom mic operator. So everybody that comes in volunteers their time, and we try to have as much fun as possible and make some good, worthwhile Star Trek. Because everybody that's making Trek now in the movie department, you know, when you get up into the Hollywood pay scale and that kind of stuff, that's not my Trek. I mean, it's good. I've seen both, you know, both shows that's out from JJ, but it's just, it's not my Trek, man. It's not original. It's, you know, it's Kirk, Spock, and whatever, but it's just not my Star Trek, so.
I think you have a lot of fans that feel the same way you do. There might even be one behind a microphone on the other end of your interview that feels the same way. Did you have a film background before you started this?
No, sir.
Not a bit.
Well, considering that, what do you think was the thing that you learned that you didn't know before you started that surprised you the most?
Go ahead, Richard.
Well, that's a hard one. Being in the audio business, I've been involved in enough TV and with plays that I had a rudimentary knowledge about most everything we needed to do.
Well, it's the same way with me. You know, I did lighting for concerts for 20 years, and now I'm doing lighting for making movies. So it's basically the same principle, but there's a lot of little characteristics that are way different from the concert world into movie production. So, you know, it's kind of the same, but it's really not.
So does anything jump out at you as kind of surprised you that it was different? Or?
No, well, I wouldn't say jumped out and surprised me. It's just the ways or the different aspects of like how you would use a lamp to light somebody on a stage for a live show compared to how you light people for different aspects or different looks when you're in a like closed set. It changes a lot of the ways that you go about it. And I've learned a lot of the little different tricks and sneaky things, you know, from different people that I know that are in the film industry. I'm like, oh, well, okay, I was kind of wondering how they did that. And, oh, well, it's really, it's that simple. You're doing this and you're doing that. And you put those two together and now you've got movie magic. And I'm like, wow, I got to write that one down.
I suppose you guys were already familiar with C96, the C96 tool on the set.
I've seen one once.
Other people refer to them as clothespins.
Yes.
But on a movie set, it's a C96. So here, now we come to one of my favorite questions, which is, what advice would you guys have? And this is going to be from a little bit different perspective here because of what you guys do. What advice would you have for fans who are coming onto your sets to shoot their own project? What would you want them to know, or what advice would you give them ahead of time that would make it easier for them in their experience?
No beverages on my set, or I'll have to kill you. Okay. As far as on a serious note, I mean, you know, we've had a few people come in and shoot stuff here. If you've never done anything as far as fan films or movie making or whatever, I would suggest, as the Grissom people were talking about in the earlier interview, you want to kind of try to bring in as many people that have some kind of knowledge, you know, even if it's not much, you know, even if it's just entry level. But the more people you have with your group that know a little bit, such as myself, I know a little bit about lights. Richard knows a little bit about audio, and he's our computer tech. But the more people you can bring in that have a vast knowledge of a lot of stuff, but maybe not a whole lot in each particular field, we kind of then implore you to like, hey, well, you know, we take your idea and add to it and go from there and go from there and go from there. So the more people you, I guess, can get together that have a little bit of knowledge, as I'm saying now for the third time, will make it easier for you, I think, in the long run.
Yeah, get your think your whole project through, get your team together at the very beginning, and, you know, have the plan together to follow the project from start to finish.
Sure, cool.
And one of the things that I think some of the people are running into is like when they actually get here and they're wanting to film, they're like, okay, well, you guys got like a crew, right? And we're like, well, yeah, I'll help you with lights, but, you know, I'm retired and disabled, so I kind of need some of your people to help me do what I do. You know, and then as we were talking, you need somebody for continuity. You need somebody for a boom operator. You got to have an audio tech. You know, you need a wardrobe person. You need a hair person. So they come in like, well, you've got like 20 people here. Which one of these are actors? Oh, none of them. This is just the crew. You know, the actors haven't even got here yet.
Yeah, a lot of people, I'd say most people, in fact, what we did with Grissom is first thing we did was wrote a story and then got our actors. Then we had to backpedal and start looking for crew.
Uh-huh.
You really want to do everything in order.
Uh-huh.
Well, some of your actors kind of get a little frustrated, too, when, you know, like if they're cast in an episode or in a future episode, and then it's still, you know, 6 months have gone by, and, well, what are y'all going to shoot? You know, well, we're still, you know, we're building up to it, and hopefully within, you know, X amount of days, we're going to get it done. But it's not like you can come in and shoot a film and have it out in 2 weeks. It takes a lot longer than that. And post-production is two ugly words that none of our people like anymore, because our post guy is just, you know, like, okay, you know, it takes time, and I have a job, and this is volunteer, so.
Is there anything that we haven't covered that you'd really like people to know about Starbase Studios?
Yes. You can go to our website, which is starbasestudios.net, and if you feel kindness in your heart, please hit that little donate to PayPal button that you will see over on the right side of the page. Because as both Richard and I have said, you know, we are 100% volunteer. We run on 100% donations only. All we want to do is, you know, keep going forward. As we take in more donations, we want to keep building and adding on to the sets. And, you know, keep going from there. And anybody that comes in here to shoot, you know, we kind of tell them, hey, you know, if you guys got friends or, you know, you got other, you know, you're involved with other shows, let them know about us. We're the only Star Trek set in North America that you can come and shoot anything, anytime, for no charge.
That's fantastic. You guys need a Patreon. You need to set up a Patreon.
So. Yeah, we talked a little bit about that, where, yeah, it's a reoccurring monthly. I know what you're talking about, so yes.
Yeah, we use that on Trek FM, and it's good. It's brought in some good results for us.
No, that's something we need to look into, especially to pay that monthly electric bill.
So you mentioned your website was starbasestudios.net. What about the two of you? Do you have Twitter handles or do you have Facebook pages? Why don't you tell me about that?
Well, we're both on Facebook. Neither one of us are on Twitter. I think we're just too old.
I don't tweet. Tweet.
Studios Facebook page is simply Starbase Studios.
That's the easiest way to find us.
Sure.
There's also a board we have called the Actors and Resources Board, where if you want to be an actor, you can go post your resume and post a picture, and then any of the shows that are filming here can find you there. Or if you have some kind of talent, like you make props or you do electronics or woodworking or whatever, or just want to help, you can put your resume up there and see if any of the shows are looking for your particular type of talent.
That sounds like a fantastic resource.
And I mean, and you don't have to just have a specific talent, you know, to come down and help us out. I mean, you can be a PA, you know, so if, you know, we have a big actor or actresses here and needs a personal assistant for the day, you know, hey, we still got to have a volunteer for that job too.
Yeah,
so
run down and pick up Shatner at the airport.
Yeah, there you go.
You laugh, but one of our Trek FM hosts recently had to go pick up Walter Koenig at his house and take him in, you know, take him to the studio to record a podcast and then drive him home. Yeah.
Right on. Oh, awesome. That's cool.
That happens.
We have had George Takei sit in our captain's chair.
Oh, fantastic.
He was in Oklahoma City doing a concert, and the concert asked us to bring the captain's chair in Center Island up there and put it in their lobby. So we got to meet him.
Oh, that's great.
Well, we had the captain's island was out there. So we went up and approached George and said, George, you know, would you come sit over in the helmsman's position, you know, and sit where you did during the original Trek? And he said, I don't sit in that chair anymore. I sit in the captain's chair now. Remember, I'm on the Excelsior. I said, oh, okay, George, here, come sit in our captain's chair, but let us take your picture.
That's great.
But he was a great guy. It was great to meet him. I had met him at a few conventions before, but this was a little bit more up close and personal with him. He is, you know, they brought him over and introduced him to Richard and I, you know, for bringing out the Captain's Island. So we got to sit down and chat with him for 15, 20 minutes, which was pretty cool.
Yeah, that is cool. Well, Richard and Scott, it's been great having you on Continuing Mission. Thank you very much for stopping by and joining us.
Thanks for having us.
And we'll want to check in with you periodically to see how your adventures are going over there in Oklahoma.
That'd be great.
Well, it's been great talking with Richard Wells and Scott Johnson of Starbase Studios today. But that isn't the only thing we've been talking about here on Trek FM this past week. So here's a quick look at some other things you may have missed elsewhere on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
You've heard Chief Tripp sign on. I'm serious, Ken. Actually, out of the chair, please.
Okay, okay. God.
I guess the Commodore has the con!
Earl Grey.
Did you really write down Groppler Zorn on this list?
I was just kidding.
This is before he achieved Groppler rank.
He was only a Soplar. He wasn't a Groppler that.
What fruit did he like before he got to apples?
The orb.
I want to hear Worf give a command sometime, like 1/4 ramming speed. And then yes. Someone says, Captain, regulation specifically states that we cannot go at 1/4 ramming speed while we are in orbit of a planet.
The Ready Room.
To what extent is this episode, the writers and producers of Deep Space Nine turning the mirror back at the fans? You know, I mean, I think all of us Star Trek fans at one point or another probably retreat into this universe we love, Star Trek, that is, it's a fictional world.
What are you talking about, Zachary? Are you suggesting that, like, fans might decide to buy microphones and, like, talk about it like it's real for hours on end?
To the journey!
Next one in line is Spirit Folk, and we already agreed that that is just not necessary for anybody, and let's not torture them with it. Good, let's move on.
The characters in the Fairhaven Hollow program begin to suspect the Voyager crew after they witness several supernatural occurrences. Commentary, Trek Stars.
Tokyo Drift really is the perfect subtitle. Like, you could literally put Tokyo Drift onto the end of any movie, and it would instantaneously become a movie that you would have to see. Citizen Kane, Tokyo Drift.
The 602 Club.
I hate it when shows that are grounded in reality, but obviously they're not, and they have their characters go through socially important experiences.
Literary Treks.
It is very much every one of the characters, you know, who finds themselves sort of pulled into the conflict that's the heart of this story. They are reacting to a fear of the other.
Meta Treks.
I'd love to answer your question, but I can't get the visual image out of my mind of B. Arthur and Betty White in Starfleet miniskirts and go-go boots.
I can totally picture the Golden Girls as Klingons.
Melodic Treks.
What I decided to do was not only would I pick a 6 degree of separation, not only would I do it musically, but I was only going to do movies that were composed by people who had composed for Star Trek.
Saturday Morning Trek.
Dorothy had a little bit of a fit with the animators. They had said over and over again, there is no moon in the Vulcan sky.
I think it was like the first episode that aired of the original series when they mentioned this, because Uhura walks up to Spock and she's like, tell me I'm beautiful. Tell me that I would look good in your moon. And he's like, Vulcan has no moon. I'm not surprised.
That is an uncanny Uhura.
Continuing Mission.
Yeah, and of course, another great thing is when it's all finished and you look at it and go, yeah, we made that together. Yeah, that's one of the greatest moments. And people respond to it and say, oh, that's pretty well made. The effects are great. The actors are great, even though they're Dutch trying to speak English, right?
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
Check out these shows and find out what we're talking about in your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe and beyond. You'll find us wherever you get your podcasts. If you're an Apple user, be sure to hit the subscribe button. That helps us out greatly and makes it easier for other listeners to find the show as they search iTunes. If you're not an Apple user, we've got you covered as well. You can find our shows on Stitcher, TuneIn, SoundCloud, Windows Phone, And of course, you can stream and download the MP3 file from our website and grab the RSS link as well. Another way you can help us keep all of our shows coming to you each week is to become a patron of the network on Patreon. If you visit patreon.com/trekfm, that's patreon.com/trekfm, you'll find our current goals and different milestone contribution levels, along with all the great perks we have for you. Those perks include early access to content, exclusive content, producer credits, seats on our content development team, and more. We really appreciate any support you can give us and hope you'll join the team. Again, you'll find all the details at patreon.com/trekfm. If you'd like to contact us with feedback or suggestions for the show, or if you have a fan project that you would like to discuss with us, you can contact us in several different ways. You can use the form at trekfm/contact. You can also leave us a voicemail. Look in the sidebar on the Continuing Mission show page at TrekFM, or go to speakpipe.com/trekfm. Our Twitter handle is at TrekFM. We can be found on Facebook at TrekFM. Or you can join the discussion on TrekFM's listeners-only group on Facebook called The Babel Conference. Type The Babel Conference, B-A-B-E-L, into the search field on Facebook, or go to our website at TrekFM and click Discussion on the menu bar. The Babel Conference is a closed group, but if you ask to join, we'll let you right in and you can join the discussion. We also invite you to leave a rating and a review of Continuing Mission on iTunes. We'd love to hear your feedback and suggestions for the show. I can always be found on the Babel Conference on Facebook, and my Twitter handle is at Dennis Castello. We'd like to acknowledge the rest of the Trek FM team, without which this or any of our podcasts would not be possible. C. Brian Jones, our founder and publisher of Trek FM, executive producers Charlene Schmidt, Matthew Rushing, and Norman Lau. Aaron Harvey, the Trek FM's art director. Will Wynn, our content manager. And Richard Marquez, our production manager. Thanks for joining us, and see you on the next mission. Thank you.